Wisconsin's Afternoon News is on the air. Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue in beautiful downtown Milwaukee. Here are your hosts, Julia Fellow, and in for John McCure, it's Toya Washington.
Toya, so glad you're here.
So happy to be here. You really lined up a good show today.
We've had some great guests. We did.
I just get to learn stuff every day when I'm with you and John, for that matter. Anyone else I sub with, I don't want anyone to feel hurt.
Including the word Shrekking.
See,
we are going to learn a new word. There's a noticeable trend, ladies and gentlemen, with Gen Z women. So that's right. In the 18-year-old to 28-year-old age range, young women want to date older men for security, and they don't care about the looks, okay? There's a term for it. It's not very nice. It's the worst. It's called Shrekking. You know the movie Shrek?
Yes, I just can't. Immediately.
Has a kind heart. Here you go.
Shrek was the uglier, not the most attractive option, but he was the better option, right? It's where women are, instead of choosing the really good-looking guys, they think, if I pick an uglier guy, then it's going to be better and he's going to treat me better, but it's not the case.
That's not the case. I know. She did give it away. Jennifer Stiers, our relationship expert. That's her full-time job, lovegen.com. She's finding her clients prefer Shrekking.
It is because they don't want to build with somebody. They want somebody who's built. They don't want to lessen their lifestyle. Yes.
Wow. That was me during the interview.
Wow.
Young women dating older men for security. So instead of looks, they're looking for the loot.
Young ladies don't want to grow with a young man. They're not successful enough, so they'll go with an older guy, and they don't care if he's not attractive as long as he's giving them what they want.
Oh, boy. A lot of the time, they tell Jennifer Stiers, they compare the guys that they're dating to their fathers and how their dads treat them, spoil them. So there could be other reasons, like they don't want to be rejected.
Yes, absolutely. And the whole idea of Shrekking also comes in from the standpoint, and that's every age group, and it's been around forever. And I think everybody gets to a point where they're like, okay, let me find someone who's not as pretty. Let me find someone who is less attractive. They may be less likely to cheat. They may treat me better. They may have less options, so they're not going to option me. They're thinking their chances are better choosing someone who's not as attractive. And then they get really upset when, like, that person does the same thing. And they're like, okay, wait, I dated you. You're beneath me. And you did the same thing. And so, yeah, it doesn't quite work.
I have a friend who did some Shrekking.
Oh, my. And
how did that work? She got cheated on, like, 5 times.
See, okay. I don't get this. I don't know what I would do if I were fresh out of college right now and the dating scene. It's such a mess. Everybody's a mess.
I didn't marry for money, I'll tell you that.
No, we're journalists. There's no money in journalism.
If we weren't married and we never found our love, would we Shrek?
No.
I might.
Here, someone, I might. She said, I might. All right. Here, I don't know. I saw it on like a Reels. I don't know. It was Instagram or something. And it blew my mind because I feel like whoever needs to hear this, I don't care if you're 20, 30, 40, 60, whatever. Someone said, do not take yourself off the top shelf because someone can't reach you. And I was like, that was poetry. Do not take yourself off the top shelf.
Ooh.
Yes.
Very
yes.
Good. And also, here's one more. I think this is really good advice. For everybody, okay? Have patience with people, okay? You don't know. Maybe something can blossom. Take a listen.
Absolutely. But for that to be your only, you know, reason, you know, most of the men that are, you know, in their 50s now that are successful, they had somebody that believed in them when they were younger and built it together, their life together. And I do think we've gotten to a point where a lot of women don't want to do that. They had, you know, were very well taken care of, had a good dad, had a lot of things given to them, and they don't want to build. So that is a statistic. I'm not just saying that. That is a statistic that these young women don't want to build with these young men. But these young men can become very successful. So you just have to think about, you know, what is most important for you. If all you want are things, then age doesn't matter, then that's fine. You've got to consider things like lifestyle, children, health, you know.
Oh, yeah.
To be taken care of. Yeah.
if all you want are things, girl, go get yourself a career so no one can take it away from you. Like, what is wrong with, oh my gosh, I can't.
True.
We could spend the next 45 minutes and I would just, without breath, be breathless at the end of it.
I put a lot of money into my husband, or not money, I'm thinking of money. I put a lot of time into my husband. I believed in him.
Yes.
I don't need an instant, you know.
But you also put that time into yourself by building your own career so that if
anything. Look in the mirror.
If anything were to happen, you got you. You got you. What was the other line I heard the other day? Someone, it was, what's her name? Bo on Black-ish. She said, I think you're one of those high maintenance girls. She said, but the thing is that I know how to maintain myself. And I was like, yes, that's what we need, ladies. Maintain yourself. Don't worry about, I can't.
That's how my father raised me. It's just, you know.
You do it for you.
Career. Yes. Mm-hmm. Afford all your own stuff. You don't have to rely on anybody.
Amen.
All right.
Preach. Preach, Pastor. Preach.
From sidelines to the studios and everything in between, no one brings you closer to the action.
Micah Parsons is on the trajectory to a first ballot Hall of Fame. That's the trajectory he's on, just plain and simple what it is.
It's time to get caught up on the green and gold with today's insider, ESPN's Alex Stroh, on Wisconsin's Afternoon News.
What the hell's going on out here?
Alex Stroh, host of Green Bay Game Day on ESPN. Thanks for joining me.
Always good to be with you. We're Johnless. I can't wait for this football talk we're going to do today.
Okay, so what have we learned with the Packers in the past four games?
Okay, great question. First two games, I think I was sitting here telling you, oh boy, watch out Santa Clara, here they come, Super Bowl, right? And the last 2 weeks has been a little bit rocky. Is that fair to say, rocky? The loss, a tie.
40 points?
40 points in a tie. Second highest scoring tied game in NFL history, by the way. They're a good team. They're not a great team. And it was a bad few weeks, but I think they're banged up a little bit on the offensive line. The bye week has come at a good time for those guys. I think they're better than they've shown us in the last 2 weeks. But it's early in the season. You're still getting your footing. They still are the youngest team in the NFL. Good team, not great right now.
Romeo Doubs looked really good.
Yes, he did.
Compared to like this time last year with all of his troubles.
All of his troubles indeed. Yeah, he skipped work last year about this time. So obviously to come out with a 3-touchdown performance is a pretty big response.
Do we think that he's performing better because there may be a trade soon?
Those rumors have slowed down a little bit in terms of, is Romeo Doubs a trade candidate? Obviously with the injuries in the Packers receiver room too, with Jaden Reed going down in week two with that collarbone injury, Christian Watson hasn't seen the field yet this year. So I would guess those rumors will slow down. And if I was guessing right now, he won't be traded. We're about a month or so away, a little bit less than a month now from the trade deadline, but he's been their number one receiver through 4 weeks. And that's a guy that Love needs. And he's kind of been his security blanket, if you will, during his 3 years as the starter. So an impressive performance by him on Sunday. And hopefully that keeps up.
So good. Okay. A lot of headlines too with Jordan Love.
Mm-hmm.
Glaring weaknesses to unlock for his potential. A lot of headlines are saying that. Are there glaring weaknesses? Or are we just not giving him a chance?
I think we're giving him a chance. I think the expectations are high when you're a $55 million a year quarterback. So when you make a crucial mistake like we talked about last week at the end of that Browns game, the interception that ultimately led to the touchdown that won the Browns that game, that's a glaring weakness. Decision making, a fumble at the end of the first half against Dallas that kind of kept the door open for them to get back into that game. Overall, he's a good quarterback. It's going to go back to what I said about the team. Good, not great. He hasn't really taken that next step that you're kind of waiting for a guy that's one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the NFL. But he's a good quarterback, and I think there's a crowd that's unfair towards him, thinks he is ultimately the problem. And then there's a crowd that's, you know, his defender, right, that thinks, okay, you know, he can do no wrong, which the truth is always somewhere in the middle. He has his problems, but I think he's better than some people say. So, again, good, not great quarterback, and maybe after the bye week, he's on an upward trajectory. But he is second in the NFL right now in quarterback rating through 2 weeks, or 4 weeks, excuse me. Second in 4 weeks. So that's good. That's a good sign.
Okay. And also Aaron Rodgers is still playing, so maybe we're all looking at him. He's doing really good.
He beat up on the Vikings like he's done many times before in Dublin, Ireland on Sunday, which was fun to wake up and watch. But so we talk about the crowds, right? there are the Packers fans that hate Rodgers and hate that he exited and hates the things he says, which he doesn't do anymore, but on the Pat McAfee show. And there's the crowd where I fall in, where I wish him well and I hope he succeeds. I don't want him to win the Super Bowl by any means, because I'd like to reserve that for the Packers. But I hope he succeeds. He's 41 years old. It's pretty impressive what he can still do.
No kidding. I can't even do like a little, what is that called when you do a heel click?
A heel click, yeah. Oh, you could do one of those.
I'd injure myself. Okay, he was smelling salts.
I saw that.
Okay, what do we think about smelling salts? That's been going on for a long time in football.
It has. So did you see the headline this offseason? They banned him for like a day and then they unbanned him?
No.
So it's BYOSS now. The NFL is no longer, NFL teams are no longer allowed to provide smelling salts to players, but they can bring their own. And I don't know if you've, have you ever done smelling salts?
Okay. So there's an expired aspirin bottle that I had.
Okay. I don't know if this falls into the same category, but please continue.
It turns into basically like ammonia.
Oh, really? So you open it and you went, holy smokes.
Well, I was offering my dad at my dad's a pharmacist. He's like, no, that's expired. It's going to smell really bad. And I said, no, it's not. I'm like, just take it because my dad had a headache. Oh, my gosh. It was horrible. So my dad said it's like smelling salts. And I was
so that's your one experience?
Almost going to puke.
I'm so glad you told me this. So
horrible.
I would guess a little bit different of a smell, rather. But maybe similar effect. Did it wake you up quite a bit?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what they do. So, but yeah, this is the first year that teams are not allowed to provide it. It's BYOSS on the NFL sideline. So I don't know if Rodgers brought his own or his teammates did.
His teammate had it and then just kind of to him. Okay. And then Rodgers just threw it onto the field, but that's okay, right?
Yeah, that's fine.
I guess
yeah.
It is.
Yeah, sure.
Interesting. Okay. What do we think about his wife, Brittany?
I know nothing. I know her name's Brittany. That's it. We can't find pictures. We can't find last names. We can't find proof of marriage. But yeah, I mean, good for him, I guess. But there's like no proof. She's a very private woman, apparently. No social media. He hasn't posted any pictures with her. That's all I know, though, Julia. You might know more than me. You're better at that investigative work.
Well, in the last segment, we were talking about Shrekking. Do you know what that is?
I don't know what Shrekking is. Please tell me more. Okay. Does it involve a swamp?
No, it involves Gen Z women,
okay,
which could be Brittany, who are dating men who are not very attractive, but have money.
Well, Rodgers is good looking, no?
He's extremely good looking. Okay. Are you kidding me? Yeah, the last game, I thought he was gorgeous. But, maybe she's just going for the money. Brittany.
I wish I knew more, but I feel like he wouldn't fall for that. He's very...
Yeah, that's true.
He does not like materialistic human beings. It's
how do we know?
Because he talks about it.
But how do we... We don't even know what she looks like.
You're right. Maybe... I don't want to accuse her of that because I don't even know who she is, but I would guess probably not what she... But maybe. The money's nice, I imagine. That guy's made a lot of money in his career.
Oh, what if he's Shrekking her?
Oh. Now, that's an idea. I'm fascinated by Shrekking.
Yeah, I know. That's
is it popular?
It's like, yes, very.
Why is it called Shrekking?
Because, you know, the movie Shrek.
Yeah, well, Shrek, and he went to Princess Fiona.
Yeah. Yeah, women are dating really ugly guys.
But he was good to her.
Yes, that's what they want. And a lot of women are doing it according to a relationship expert that we just heard from because Toya and I talked about it, because their dads are spoiling them.
Oh,
yeah,
fascinating concept.
Yeah.
I like this bi-week Green and Gold Insight. We should talk about stuff like this all the time.
Alex Stroh, he's the host of Green Bay Game Day on ESPN. Alex, thanks for joining us.
Anytime. Talk to you next week.
We have ABC News correspondent, crime and terrorism analyst Brad Garrett with us from Washington, D.C. Brad, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
Lots to cover today, including the terror attack at the synagogue in Manchester, England. Can you give us the latest on that?
So, as you well know, today is, I think, the biggest, if not one of the biggest, Jewish holidays. And so, I believe mid-morning, maybe British time, a individual drove up and apparently rammed his car into people that were outside the synagogue. This is like north of Manchester, England. It's close to Manchester, but not right in the city. After he did that, apparently got out of the car, stabbed at least two people, and then the police showed up and got into a shootout, or they killed him. But they couldn't approach him because it looked like he had a bomb strapped to himself. Witnesses had told the police that this person tried to get actually into the synagogue, which would make more sense if he actually had a suicide vest on or whatever. And I haven't gotten resolution as did he actually have a bomb or is just something to look like it. The other added component, according to the police in Manchester, is that they've arrested two other people connected to this guy some way. It's unclear to me in what capacity. So this is another example of, you know, how could you have stopped the day? And I think the answer is you couldn't have unless somebody told the police in advance.
Yeah, I read that there was, according to ABC News, two men in their 30s and one woman in her 60s that was arrested. Okay, let's switch the gears here now to political violence. And male children and young men are being lured more and more into online extremism.
So if you look at, you know, the recent shootings, Charlie Kirk, the one that occurred in Dallas, in the same day as Charlie Kirk, there was a 16-year-old that shot two of his classmates. They didn't get a lot of coverage just because of Charlie's case, obviously got a lot of coverage. But be that what it may, you have those cases. And if you look at, in particular, those three, and I could look at many more, but since those just recently happened, they all seem to have a pretty heavy online presence, where they spent hours a day online, some of them playing video games, some of them apparently playing violent video games. And it seems to be a common thread in many mass shooters. Now, having said that, obviously there are millions of kids and young adults that spend way too much time online that's probably causing them some behavioral problems, but they don't become violent. So really, these folks that you and I are talking about are sort of a subset that maybe spend as much time online as other people, but for whatever reason, it ends up affecting them more. And if they get attached, whether it's a left or right-oriented issue, whether it's white supremacy or being, you know, pro-transgender, that part actually doesn't matter. What matters is that it becomes such an obsession for the person that they end up going out and committing a violent act. And again, like the first example we talked about in reference to Manchester, England, none of these folks who spent these hours and hours and many of them years online are doing anything wrong. Is it dysfunctional and maybe self-destructive? Sure. It's not against the law. And just about every one of them got their weapons legally. So you're now left with some, you know, very troubled folks that, unless you knew that they were going to go to a roof, you know, outside a nice facility in Dallas or to, you know, a rally, one of Charlie Kirk's rallies, and get on a roof and shoot him, you're just not going to stop that unless you know about it in advance. And many people, you know, just don't say anything because they're living in particular in a very isolated, singular world where it's all about the fantasy that's created around staying online all the time.
I think one of the things that we learned shortly after the Charlie Kirk case, or actually after his shooting, a lot of us who do not spend as much time online or do not know these pockets of activity that is going on, I guess, can you give us a sense just from your reporting and investigating, like how much does the government know about these dark recesses and corners of the internet and of gaming and these chat rooms and what happens? And I guess, it, you know, for those of us who are just waking up to this, that was one of my first questions. It's just like, how much do investigators, how much does the FBI know? How much do top authorities know about these back chat rooms that are a mystery to those of us who aren't gamers, who aren't chronically online?
Well, the government knows a lot about them, and folks who study this stuff know a lot about them. But again, it's not against the law to say hateful things or have hateful ideas. Like, you know, you belong to the Ku Klux Klan or some white supremacy group. It's abhorrent to a lot of people, but it's still not against the law. If they go out and do something illegal, that's a different story. So, and you also have to think about the sheer volume I mean, this is not just a problem in the U.S. This is a problem all over the world as far as people spending, you know, an inordinate amount of time online. But, you know, the government, first of all, can't monitor billions of people, or like the U.S., even millions of people. Can they be aware of it? But just because you've gone on some website that promotes whatever it is you're into, and that's really what the topic is day in and day out on that particular social media site, unless you are outwardly saying things, I'm going to a mosque, a synagogue, or wherever it might be, to a Charlie Kirk rally and harm people, and law enforcement knows about it, obviously they're going to stop you. But, you know, that's not a very reliable way to stop people. I'm only suggesting is that if you haven't broken the law and you now walk up to a line and decide to step over that line and go and break the law, you know, who's there to stop you? Well, the answer is no one, unless somebody tells law enforcement in advance.
That's right. He is ABC News crime and terrorism analyst Brad Garrett. If you see something, say something. Brad, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Take care.
4:49 on WTMJ. Hope you're having a great Friday Eve. Ryan Sternett is running for governor. He's in a crowded Democratic race. Has never served in elected office, but he knows a lot about beer. He's a beer vendor. And he joins us in studio. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
So where do we typically see you? We're at AmFam, right?
Yes, AmFam Field. I generally hang out in the bleachers section on the second level, loge level, at the stadium, although I am permitted to vend all the way down the third baseline and that second level right in front of the press box.
How do we get people to buy beer? What do you say? What's the big tagline?
I don't have a big tagline. I say beer here, and maybe my favorite tagline, seventh inning, I'll yell, last call inning on beer. We have other beer vendors who are famous for some of their taglines, however.
Do you lose your voice?
Occasionally.
Okay. Well, you're going to have to do a lot of talking if you're running for governor.
That's
so,
right.
Okay, here's my question. You ran before for elected office for one of the state.
State Assembly.
Yeah, as a Republican, but you switched parties.
Yes.
Explain.
It was 2000. I was living in Oak Creek. That was in the 21st State Assembly District. And the district there was being held by a Democrat, more so a conservative Democrat, the late Jeff Plaley. And I kind of thought, you know what, I want to jump into the race, you know, get my feet wet, whether it be in token fashion or not. And I had some values at the time, really growing up in the Reagan administration and being a military veteran, United States Army for 3 years in the mid-90s. I thought, okay, you know what, I'll run as a Republican against Jeff Plaley and see where this goes. And so I ran, you know, I got like 37% against him. But then I had displayed some pro-lefty issues, such as back then I wanted to raise the then revenue. Well, do we still have revenue caps? I wanted to raise the revenue caps on school districts, and I was more pro-union. And so after I lost early in the next year, 2001, I got with a few of the elected officials then from the Democratic Party, the late Rick Groschmidt, then State Senator Brian Burke, and he encouraged me to come on board, and I did soon after that.
Got it. Okay, interesting. I didn't know if it was because of Donald Trump or what, so I see. Okay, so we played this in the 3 o'clock hour. You spoke to a television station saying a great way for schools to get revenue would be to sell alcohol at high school games like football. Why do you think that is a good idea?
Here's why, and I'll double down on that, too, is because as a citizen, I'm sick and tired of hearing, and as I alluded to a minute ago about these revenue caps, school districts have been trying to reinvent the wheel more so and going to referendums, on trying to raise more money for the schools. And it breaks my heart when I see teachers are being laid off and school buildings are starting to fall apart. I was actually thinking about this for a few years now with my drinks in the seats operation. And had Tony Evers would have chose to run for a third term, I had already told my partners at the stadium about this, that I would do a complete study on and go public with it on whether high schools should be selling alcohol at their sporting events. So I'm just going to say it like this, is that, hey, that's another sporting event. We can sell alcohol there just like at the stadium. Or back where my parents live out west, we have a rodeo there. They sell alcohol there. And I got a lot and lot of feedback on this. And then I sat down on Friday night and went through. I was laying on my couch going through what everyone was saying on social media off the interview I had with Vanessa Kelton out in Madison. And I hear an array of things, good, bad. I got a couple phone calls about it from some people who are concerned about it. We'll talk about that maybe later. But it got me into thinking that you know, the money has to come, we have to get the money somewhere. And also, there have been some other similar situations countrywide about this, in Texas in particular. They'll have sports facilities there with some soccer fields there, and they'll have an umbrella bar in the center, and parents can go and purchase alcohol there. And even being remote from the soccer field, they can still, from a distance, see their kids play and still drink alcohol. They can't move past that point, past the bar. But in effect, it's already happening already in other states.
Very interesting, because now you're saying this, like, one of the places I have kids that play soccer, and we've been all over the country for that matter. Yes. But even in Wisconsin, like, there are fields that we go to during tournaments where they sell Eline being one of them.
Yeah.
Sell alcohol during the games. I wonder how that would actually, like you said, if it would actually work. Like, one of my thoughts is just like, okay, way back when hockey at Madison was off campus and they could sell alcohol, but you could only be in one space and it was between periods. So, I mean, if there's a will, there's a way,
right?
We
had some people talking about it. John and I had a poll up here, and a lot of people were saying stupid, just one-word sentences. But, you know, where does the money come from? It's going to come from taxpayers, or, you know, so it's, you're coming up with an idea. So, but what's the probability that you'd actually win? Because Lieutenant Governor, she just raised $2 million. She secured it. We had the county executive here, and he knows a lot of people. You know, he's a delegate with the DNC. What are the chances you're going to win?
I can't let all those numbers awe me. Yes, I know about the $2 million in independent funds. Okay, I have connections too. Okay, I've already raised, it's in the five-figure range right now. Sure, that's a far cry from what Sarah got. I just need to keep at it. I am a different candidate. Okay, let's look at Sarah. Let's look at Missy Hughes. Let's look at State Senator Kelder Royce. They may have to split that vote. And granted, they won't go out and give my ideas, such as selling alcohol at high school football games or eliminating emission tests for vehicles. But they'll look at me. They'll look at me as a one-of-us candidate. They're going to look at David Crowley different, too. But just by saying that and not going any further, I have to pay attention to my own lane, do what I can to raise money, hope to make it to the next step, make televised debates, hopefully. The rest of the state can see me, and we'll just see what happens.
We will.
We will.
We will. We have many months to go.
Democratic candidate running for governor, Ryan Sternad. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. We appreciate it.
I appreciate it, too.